C1B 1 and 2.
Number 6A.
We come today to the tone of spirit as a main subject, and we know now that the problem stated by Mr. Seti is that the idea of spirit dissolves the Christ. It's counterfeit belief. Now, she has taken as an idea of spirit, she has taken spiritual reality, so that she will teach us here how the idea of spiritual reality dissolves the belief in a material reality. That's the epitome. And if our findings are right, that the law of the subtones always follow the same order, then in a way we could define to ourselves, say in a crude way, not in that beautifully refined way and polished way that Mrs. Eddy can do it, we would now see what the text would have to tell us. Namely, that from the point of view of mind, we would have to see that she would have first to state those two opposing standpoints of the reality, that there is a spiritual reality on one side, and on the other side there seems to be a material reality, and that these two never blend with each other, that they have nothing in common with each other. So she goes out first from the proposition that spirit only produces the spiritual, and quite apart from that, there is the belief that matter may produce something spiritual, and therefore that is a belief, and that therefore that is wrong, that like produces only like. Those who know the synonymous term know that like producing like is an idea of spirit, of the order of spirit that runs through all nature. All nature, only like produces like. That's the order in nature. This is also the divine order of spirit, that spirit produces only the spiritual, that the material can never produce something different than the material, can never produce its opposite, mind. Because that is the belief, that matter can produce mind, intelligence, laws, and so on. And this is exactly what Mrs. Eddy presents here. She shows here that like produces like, namely that mind produces only the spiritual and therefore never produces its unlikeness, matter. And the same way, on the other side, that matter produces only like, it cannot produce its unlikeness, mind. This is the proposition from which she goes out. Like producing like. And if you read the text here, you can see that this simple statement is made very elegantly. And then she gives 9 examples of like producing like. So we don't need to be sidetracked by the 9 examples that take up more text than the fundamental statement. See, we have to be careful that when we read a text, as I said before, I repeat it, and I will repeat it in the future again until one knows it, that one must see that examples are not important. They do not give us more information, not one bit more information. It's the fundamental statement that gives information. Therefore, here she says, for instance, when she speaks about like producing like, and in the marginal heading you have like evolving like, you see you have a typical tone of spirit. And then she gives 9 examples. She says, we cannot gather grapes from thorns, we cannot gather figs from thistles, we cannot produce intelligence from non-intelligence. Matter never produces mind. You see, it's again the opposite. The immortal never produces the mortal. Good cannot result in evil. A mineral is not produced by a vegetable. Man is not produced by the brute. spirit does not produce matter. So, can you see now how in many, many ways she just always says the same thing over and over and over, like produces not unlike. Therefore, we do not need to pore over the text and, for instance, investigate why the immortal never produces the mortal. She could have brought in many other examples. She could have said that truth never produces error, or she could have said that health never produces sickness. There would have been millions and millions of examples, you see? So let's see that we can distill out of the text that which is spiritually fundamental. And so she says then that the order of genus and species is preserved throughout the entire round of nature. That's again the order of genus and species, like producing like. Never has an elephant produced a flower, a daisy. This is the underlying law in evolution, a terrific law in evolution. She says error would like to reverse this order. Here you see, for instance, now as an example, how suddenly, after having given all that text of like producing like, the order of species is maintained, suddenly she brings in, as I quoted right now, something which sounds a bit foreign. Error would like to reverse this order. It still is referring to order, but suddenly she brings in error would like to reverse this order. And this is typical for this chapter, I have said. The whole orchestra is playing. What we do together are actually only two instruments, namely the main tone and then the subtones. But we have seen that in between, actually I haven't brought out every time the text says so, in between there is another instrument playing from time to time which says, this reality, spirit, is life absolutely true, and therefore error can play no part in it. Remember, spirit, life, truth. See, here, for instance, she suddenly brings in the position of error and says, error, the opposite of truth, would like to turn that whole thing upside down, would like to reverse it. So we don't need to be sidetracked by that statement and say, well, this does not repeat the general theme of like producing like, but now comes in that which would like to reverse this very law, this very reality, and therefore brings in that tone of error. You see that over and over, just always to showing that what she is presenting here as like producing like is the truth about reality, and therefore error would like to reverse it. All right, perhaps I find other statements where I can show you that again. Naturally, only if we would read the consecutive text, we would see that much clearer. But we can't do that in a day. So we go further to the subtone of spirit. We had now had spirit as mind, stating the opposite proposition. Now we come to spirit as spirit, bringing in somehow the fact that the spiritual is real, is factual, is real, and that the material is unreal. And actually we have epitomized it, that spirit is the real, matter is the unreal. What does the text say to it? The text says to it, she speaks about the realm of the real is spirit. Can you hear? The realm of the real is spirit. The unlikeness of spirit is matter. You have the unlikeness of spirit is matter. And therefore the opposite, she says, of the real. Therefore the unreal. Therefore it is not divine, and therefore an unreal concept. Therefore she says matter, which is the opposite of the real, which is unreal, says again, you listen, suddenly she comes in with truth. Matter, therefore, is an error in statement, is an error in the premise, and leads to error in the conclusion. Yeah? Can you hear that little trumpet coming in? Huh? That trumpet of spirit, life, truth, playing on those three, sometimes on the tone of life, sometimes on the tone of truth, sometimes on all three, spirit, life, truth. It's always the question, is then unreality actually an unreality? What is it, that unreality? It is error. It is an erroneous statement. We go on to soul, and somehow we would have to see now again that that spiritual reality somehow is outside material reality, is above material reality, that it is in the realm of metaphysics, just as she has shown that in the great tone of mind, the soul, here now in spirit, the soul, again she brings in the metaphysical point, because it is metaphysics, above physics, so that we have here that therefore there is no matter in spirit, and this explains away the notion of substance matter. So because spirit is above and outside matter in the metaphysical realm, it is never in matter, and therefore matter can have not the reality of spirit, and therefore is unreal. The marginal heading there already gives us a clue. It is substance versus supposition. The moment you hear substance, you have a tone of spirit. The moment you have supposition, you have the counterfeit of soul, because you suppose something that is not, that cannot be truly identified. And her text runs along the following line of reasoning. She says, there is nothing in spirit out of which to create matter. Therefore, matter can never be in spirit. Spirit must therefore be always outside of matter. And therefore, she goes on and says, therefore, divine metaphysics, above physics, explains away matter, because matter is not in spirit, and spirit is the real. Therefore, she comes to the conclusion that spirit is the only substance. You see, this is now the main point of that big second tone, the reality, it's the only substance. Therefore, she says, in spirit there is no matter. You see that? Then again she says, but naturally the material senses, the counterfeit of soul, the material senses oppose it. But she said, there are no material senses, because there is no matter, there can be no material senses, the opposite of soul, and therefore the notion of substance matter is a false supposition. Spirit can have no opposite. That's how she ends it. Spirit can have no opposite. When we come to principle, according to our law, we expect now that she is going to show us that behind the spiritual reality must be an eternal fundamental cause, one cause, and that there is no foundational cause behind material so-called substance. How does she elaborate that tone? Right at the beginning you see that the marginal heading is one cause supreme, indicating not so much here mind as the cause, but principle as the cause. Because what she presents is that there are fundamentally no two eternal causes, but only one cause. Perhaps I have to explain quickly the difference between mind as the cause and principle as the cause. Very often here in this chapter, when she comes to the subtone of principle, she will speak about cause in the meaning of foundational. from where does something come from, but not so much in the way of from where or where is what is the creator from which it comes, but much more from which proposition is a statement deduced. The moment you have a sense of deduction, naturally you have principle and not mind. Mind, therefore, is the creator as cause. But principle is that foundation to which everything has to be brought back, or principle is that basis from which we deduce every idea. So when a deductive reasoning is involved, you can easily say that principle naturally is the basis, or principle is the cause of all ideas from which you deduce them. See, that's why you have that great difference between the first day of creation and the fourth day of creation. Both have symbols of light in it. Let there be light in the first day, but in the fourth day also there are lights, the big light, the smaller light, and the stars also, and the earth reflecting that light, and the moon reflecting that light. But there the light is always shown in its relationship. From where can we deduce light? And so here you will see very often that the moment we say, how can we bring back a phenomena to its cause, we mean, how can we bring back a phenomena to its principle, to its noumenon? And therefore, this is a different reasoning. You ask here, as I put it, what authority lies behind an idea? The moment I ask this, I ask for the question of principle and not of mind. Here you have it very distinctly, that she says there is one cause supreme in the marginal heading, meaning there is only one cause from which everything can be deduced, and that there are not two eternal causes, as she puts it in the text. She says, as we approach spirit, see, as we approach spirit, as we approach the principle of spiritual reality, which is then the synonymous term spirit, we lose all consciousness of matter. The admission that there can be a material substance, she says, if we will go out that matter has substance and would admit that, that would ask what is the cause of matter. We would have to ask what is the principle of matter. And so this would require another admission. Are you in the flow? Perhaps I have to repeat quickly. She says, if we admit in the first place that matter has substance, that something like this exists as material substance, we admit that that would require also another admission, namely that spirit is not infinite, that matter therefore is self-existent, eternal, from which, you can see, now she goes a step further in reasoning, from which it would follow, she reasons in deductive way, from which it would follow that there are two eternal causes, warring forever with each other. Whereas the fact is that spirit is supreme and all presence. Do you see the point? So see a principle and says, if we would admit two existences, two substantial existences, one spirit, one material, if we would admit that, as usually the world admits it, and says, yes, there is matter, yes, there is spirit, we would have to admit that both have their own principle from which they are deduced, and therefore would have to admit two eternal causes. Yeah? And at this point, therefore, she would say, there we have seen that only one, namely spirit, is all and supreme, and matter has actually no foundation. Matter cannot be led back to something that is behind it, as the spirit can be reduced or be brought back to the divine principle, the divine cause. cause, the one cause. He will go on to life and show what we can calculate spiritually now. She would have to say what? She would have to say our main subject is spiritual reality. She would have to say that spiritual reality, spiritual substance, is eternal in life. And she would have to say that therefore what is called material reality or material substance is temporal and would decay. Wouldn't we expect it now? So I'm going to read what she says, and you just test if what she says, naturally is a bit more involved, she reasons a bit longer than I just presented as a statement. She would start in right by saying the belief of the eternality of spirit, you hear, eternality of spirit, contradicts the belief of life as, contradicts life as matter. Spirit, she says, is substantial and eternal. You see? Why should she say at this period, spirit is substantial, and not make a full stop, and add, and is eternal? Because that's her subject now. At this point, compared with the other statements, she wants to bring out the eternality of the substance of spirit. Therefore, she says, the doom of matter. Can you hear the doom, the counterfeit of life? The doom, the death of matter, shows that matter never originated, see, in mind, has no principle back behind itself, a divine principle behind itself, that matter is therefore not eternal. You hear? Matter is not eternal. The side note is material mortality. Have you ever seen a more precise caption? Material, counterfeit of spirit, mortality, the counterfeit of life. That's what she's speaking here. So that you get at once that tone of the spiritual reality is eternal, whereas matter, so-called material reality, is unreal and is temporal, and matter is doomed to decay. Why is it? And here you see it so nicely in this reasoning. You know, these reasoning are so delicate. See it so nicely. Why should matter decay? She gives again the reason, because matter, she goes back to principle, has nothing behind itself to back it up. There is no principle behind matter to back up matter and say, I sustain you. That's why she had first in spirit as principle to show that behind spirit is a sustaining principle, whereas behind matter there is no sustaining cause, no sustaining principle, no sustaining foundation. And as you have taken away the foundation under the feet of matter, it has nothing to stand up in it anymore, therefore it begins to doom, to decay in life. Whereas spirit remains eternal because it has a principle behind itself. Yeah? Isn't it delicate? Can you see, I just take here and there an example a bit more closely, just to bring out, to become aware that when you read that text, it is so logical. And yet, we admit, that's why I have asked that big question right at the beginning, before we started, when we have read that text, we didn't quite know where we were always. We had just one statement next to the other without any relationship. Structure is relationship. Understanding is relationship. Yeah? And not just statements.